Okay, everybody, we're going to get started. Thank you all for being here. And just a reminder for those of you that just came in, please put your cell phones on mute because you're going to want to hear every minute of this important presentation. Welcome to the Texas Conference for Women. We're glad that you could be with us this morning as part of the conference personal development track. We have a really fun hour planned for you today. I'm Leslie Ward. I'm Senior Vice President of Legislative Affairs and Corporate Affairs for AT&T. My responsibilities include developing and executing strategies, impacting AT&T's participation in the Texas political process, and directing our state legislative policy. AT&T's worldwide headquarters are located in Dallas, and AT&T is proud to support the Texas Conference for Women and encourage women leaders from across our state. There isn't an hour that passes in my corporate or personal life without a question of budgeting, large or small. That's one reason I'm thrilled to be here to introduce our author and empower each of you with the tools to own and to build your own wealth. During the session, we'll discuss the powers that each of you has through our budgeting and spending choices. I am so excited this morning to introduce Tiffany Alec. Tiffany, also known as the Budgetista, is quickly becoming America's favorite personal financial educator. The Budgetista is the founder of the Live Richard Challenge. Since 2008, Alec has specialized in the delivery of financial education that includes seminars, workshops, curricula, and trainings. She's the best-selling author of the books The One-Week Budget and Live Richer Challenger. And I must tell you that I bought The One-Week Budget when I knew that I was going to be introducing her, and I highly recommend it. I've already got it tabbed up. It's really good. And she's going to be signing books right after this presentation, so I highly recommend it. Her financial advice has been featured on Good Morning America, The Today Show, PBS, Time, The New York Times, Essence Magazine, Forbes, Fox Business, MSNBC, and CBS Money Watch. She also blogs about personal finance for The Huffington Post and the U.S. News and World Report. And you can find her on Twitter at The Budgetista. Please put your hands together and welcome Tiffany Alec.
Thank you. Hey, hey. Ooh, am I on? Okay. Hey, hey, hey. Wow, standing room only. I always get nervous, like, no one's gonna come. Nobody cares about money. But here you are. So, a little background about myself. I actually used to be a school teacher for over 10 years. So, you're gonna get real, tangible lessons about what you can do. Take notes. Take screenshots or pictures if you need to. You're gonna get homework. But I'm also going to give you something at the end, okay? All right, let's get started. 7 steps to living a richer life. Who would like to be a little bit richer? What about a lot of bit richer? So let's get started. So I always ask this question, just so I can get a gauge of who's in the audience. What is your financial nickname? So mine is the Budgetista, because when I started on my journey, I grew up in a household where money was talked about all the time. And my dad was a CFO, and I have 4 sisters. So he taught my sisters and I about money. Every Thursday, we would have money class. And I really took to them. And so my sister, Lisa, the baby, said, "Ooh, you know the fashionista?" And I said, "Yeah." She's like, "That's not you. But you know what you are. You're a Budgetista." So I wouldn't know if that was a compliment or... But so it gets... Because I was always really good at budgeting, really good at managing. So maybe just 2 or 3 people, what would your financial nickname be and why? Just so I can get a gauge of the room. Yes. The reckless spender. The reckless spender. I don't think we need an explanation for that one. All right, who else?
The autopilot.
Okay. I always say automation is a new discipline. All right, who else? Binge shopper. Okay. Couple more, yes.
The dog caretaker.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
Amazon queen.
I have a feeling we have a lot of Amazon queens in here, right? One more.
Broke but fly.
Okay. All right. We're going to work on some of those. All right, so it all starts with a budget. Take a picture with your phone if need be, because I want you to be able to listen and hear. So here is a basic 4-step budget. And the good thing is at the end, I've already queued up my admin, Michelle, I'm going to give you her email, and she's going to send you the first chapter one of the one-week budget that Leslie shared with you up here. She's going to send that to you for free if you just ask for it. I told Michelle, I'm like, are you ready, Michelle? She's like, I'm ready. And so this is actually in the book, and I'm actually going to give you a template that you can fill out. So step one when you're creating your own budget is to list everything you spend money on. Everything. You're not sure? Guess who knows? Your bank statement knows, right? Your credit card statement knows. So not just bills, but the kids, if you have kids. Do you go wild? Grooming, groceries, everything. That is step one. Step two, write down how much each of those things cost you a month. It is critical with your budget. Your budget is just a picture of what your finances are doing. So it's critical to get a gauge, a snapshot. So I like a snapshot of a month. So writing down what you spend monthly is critical. So let's just say you know what your mortgage or your rent is a month. But let's say you get your hair done. So I've got locks. I get them retwisted every 3 months, and they cost me $100 to get retwisted. So that's 100 divided by 3, $33 a month. So let's just say you eat out breakfast twice a week, and it's $5. So that's $10 a week. That's 10 times 4 weeks in a month. That's $40 a month. So you see, you start how to fill out your budget. So your monthly amount. And then step three is add up the expenses. I like to call this your money list that you're creating. And so I also like to call step three your tears and tissue step. Right? Because that's when you start to realize I'm spending way more than I make. Right? Because step four, really you start to subtract what you're spending from what you make. So that's critical. And the good thing about a budget, it's like, well, here's the thing. It's like the bad news is it's you. But the good news is it's you. So that means at any time you can make a different choice. But you can't make a choice if you don't know where you stand. So that's why creating this four-step budget is an important start. Got it? Good. All right. So I know it's like 99.9%. Any guys in here? I saw one guy. Oh, the lone guy. It's okay. I'm going to be nice to you. Now that I know you're here, I'm going to pick on you the whole time. No, I'm just teasing. But did you know that women make up to 70% of the financial choices in the household? 70. Even if you're not the breadwinner, even if you're a stay-at-home mom, you still make up to 70%. Ask yourself this. So I'm married, right? My husband and I are choosing a car. If I hate the car and he loves it, are we getting it? Exactly. If I love the car and he's like, I hate it, are we getting it? There's a likelihood of yes, right? So women make up to 70% of the financial choices in the household. So it's critical that you get on board if you want your family to get on board, okay? And that's why this movement I created is so important. All right, so let's start. So lesson one, money mindset. Every financial choice matters. Everyone say that. Every financial choice matters. So this is Young Budgetista. I think it was 9 here. I'm not happy because this was my first year in public school. And in private school, you got dressed up. I went to Catholic school. You got dressed up for picture day. No one told me that the public school kids didn't get dressed up. So I came in my Sunday's best, my little purple dress, my little plastic chain attaching my collar, and all the kids laughed at me. So I'm sitting there like, just take the picture. So, but this is how old I was when I made my first financial choice, 9. Anyone here younger than 9? Exactly. That means your financial choices are going to matter, too. So I used to actually ride my sister's bike as a kid. And when I was turning 10, I asked my father, I said, Daddy, I want a bike for Christmas. And so my dad is traditional. He was born in Nigeria, came here, went to school, got his master's, and he has always been really tight, especially with 5 kids with he and my mom. And so when he was sitting at the dining room table, I didn't realize he was doing the bills, or I probably didn't even care because I'm 10. And my mom was giving me the look like, not now. And so I said, Daddy, I would like a bike for my birthday. And so my American name is Tiffany, but my Nigerian name is Adochi. And so that's what he calls me when he's particularly not happy. He said, oh, Adochi, so you want a bike? A whole bike. I was like, I didn't know they came in pieces, but yes, sir. And so he said, okay, if you want a bike, then you have to pay some bills. And I remember thinking, no, I knew it was going to go something like this. But what he meant was he wanted me to add up the bills that he was adding up and subtract it from what he and my mom made. And that was like the first time I was exposed to a budget. And I realized like, wow, I didn't know, you know, what a mortgage was. I thought you bought a house the way you bought a shirt one time. Right? And so I knew about the lights because who didn't get yelled at for keeping the lights on? you know? And so I didn't realize all of these things it took to run the household. And so I thought to myself at first, this is the bike that I really wanted. But I ended up, after seeing what was left over, deciding that I was going to get something that I could not just ride when I was 10, but something I could grow into. And I ended up getting this big blue ugly bike that I got teased for forever. But I rode this bike in middle school, high school. I played tennis all throughout up until college. I rode this when I was tennis team captain, all my jobs as a teenager. My younger sister used to deliver papers on this bike. I used this bike to lose weight as a freshman. You know, ladies, we gave that freshman 25. My dad is retired now in his 70s. He rides this bike for exercise. I got this bike when I was 11. I am 30. Actually, just had a birthday, so it should say 39. I'm 39 years old now. I know, right? 39, looking 25. Right? I'm 39 years old, and so 28 years later, this bike is still relevant because there's no such thing as a small financial choice. Every financial choice matters. So if a bike, a choice I made when I was 11, is still relevant now, so the choices that you make are still relevant. So that is lesson number one. It's not just your hair. It's not just a bike. It's not just the car you chose. It's not just the neighborhood or the house or the rent. It all adds up to the life that you're living now. So if you want a different financial life, you have to make different financial choices. It's not going to just magically happen. Got it? Good. All right, money mindset. People always ask me about my bracelets. And so what they are is they are a physical reminder of the four choices you should ask yourself, four questions, before you make a financial choice. So let's read them. Do I need it? Love it? Like it? Want it? Again, need it? Love it? Hey, yes. Right? So need it, love it, like it, want it. What is a need? Give me an example of a need. Food. Water. Electricity, clothes to be covered, not cute, right? So needs are things that you must have to maintain life. That comes first. Most of us take care of that because you're here, right? Then come your loves. And here's what I found. People usually skip over the loves and go right to likes and wants. I give you an example. My best friend, I call her Fancy Girl. So Fancy Girl really love. She wanted to go on vacation, but it's just something that she's like, I can't afford to do it. But every time we would go, like, shopping, she would always pick up little, like, tchotchkes that she didn't necessarily need. And me being the budgetista, I started adding them up secretly. Tchotchke number one. Tchotchke number two. And then after about, I want to say 6 months of her complaining again, like, oh, I'm never going to be able to go on vacation. I said, actually, let me show you your list of tchotchkes that added up to vacations. She was like, Tiffany, something is truly wrong with you. I'm like, I'm the budgetista. You knew this when we became friends. But I wanted to show her that she was skipping over her loves and getting right to the likes and wants because they're less expensive. But they were costing her what she really wanted to do, which was go on vacation, right? So you put your needs first and pick two loves that you're going to focus on. So I always say this. Ask yourself, if you had Oprah's bank account, what would you do or what would you do more of? Travel is always the number one thing I hear people say, right? What else? Pay off debt? What else? Buy a house. Concerts. So typically, people pick experiences versus things, right? Because they're more enriching. So then if that's so, why are we spending so much money on the likes and wants, right? So I want you to live more of a life. And so if your idea of more is travel and concerts, then every time you spend money on something that's not that and not a need, you're actually living less of a life. My friends used to tease me and say I was so cheap because I didn't want to go to brunch with them on Sundays anymore because it was costing like $25 to like $30 every Sunday. And they're like, oh, Tiffany, you never want to spend any money. But they would still call just out of like, you know, let's call Tiffany. She's not going to want to go. And then one day, because I live in New Jersey, I said, well, I'm going to have to call you back. I'm actually in Arizona in a hot air balloon, right? And they were not in Arizona, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's the hot air balloon capital. So that was on my bucket list. And she's like, wait, what? I said, I'm in a hot air balloon. I have to call you back. The captain says we're about to go. She's like, but you were just in Jersey. I'm like, I know. This is where my brunch money goes. Bye. A little pettiness, right? But it's because I was living her idea of more. Right? So some of us are living, so she loved brunch. Travel wasn't that important to me, her.
So my money was going toward her idea of more. Why? She should, like, my friends who do want to go to brunch, they should do that together. And I should put my money toward the things that enrich my life. And I want the same for you. So don't forget, need it, love it, like it, want it. Those are the four questions you ask yourself. If it's not a need or love, it doesn't mean you don't get it. It just means I want you to be conscious that anything else takes away from those two things. And if you're okay with it, then be okay with it. But make it a conscious choice. Got it? Good. All right, budget and savings. So separate to see and open a bills account. This is not just for relationships. Is it out of the, oh, you know what? Separate to see, so not just for relationships, right? Sometimes you have to separate to really see your finances. Many of us have, I don't know in Texas if, so let's just say you're eating, I'm Nigerian, so we have something called jollof rice. That's like where all, you have the meat, the starch, the vegetable, it's all in one pot. Let's just say you're in Louisiana. I'm assuming it's a gumbo or is it jambalaya? Gumbo, right? So I don't know, in Texas, is there like a pot food where, kind of like chili, right? Look, everybody just knew, chili, right? Right? So mixing your foods like that, great for food, terrible for money. Some of you have chili money. You got your savings, your bills, your entertainment, everything in all one pot, and you don't know what's from what. But I want you to separate your money. At the very least, here's the accounts that I say at the very least. Typically, people have a regular checking account. It's attached to your debit card, right? So I like to call that my deposit account. That is the account where all of your money lands when you get paid. Keep that account. But I also say you should have at least one additional checking account and call it your bills account. And so what that is, it's a separate checking account where you're going to separate your bill money so you never have to wonder, is this money for spending or is this money for bills? You know, because every paycheck, you're going to separate your bill money and then that bills account is going to pay bills for you, right? And so doing that is really going to help you tremendously, and especially if you automate your bills. I typically don't like companies to come in to take their money. Instead, I like my bills account to send money out. That way, if I don't have it, it won't send it. But if a company comes in, the bank is like, well, you're here, so take what she doesn't have. And then $35 later in overdraft fees, you're like, no, you know? And so having a separate checking account for your deposits. And so I don't like to have my debit card linked to my bills account. So you can specifically say, I'm opening up this account. I don't want a debit card because you don't want to swipe. That is not the purpose of that account. And then having a separate account, obviously, for savings. And so those are the accounts. So some sort of savings, some sort of, and two checking accounts. That's going to help you tremendously. I used to be the overdraft queen. They knew me at the bank. Like, hey, Tiffany, you overdrafted again, didn't you? I'm like, yes, can I speak to Bob? This is just my last time, I promise. Because everything was, I had chili money, but we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to separate to see, right? And money bucket. So here is my favorite place to save. I believe you should have a regular bank. Yes, a big bank, yes, for convenience. I believe you should have a credit union for borrowing because you're going to get the best interest rate, right, for borrowing when it comes to a credit union. And then I also believe you should have an online-only bank. And here's why. With an online-only bank, they don't have the overhead of a normal bank. So your interest rate is going to be, the interest you'll earn on your money is going to be higher. But what I really like for an online-only bank, I call it a money bucket because I want you to imagine back in 7th grade science class, your teacher is telling you, hey, Tiffany, or hey, Sheila, or Barbara, we're going to see how much it rained last night. We're going to put a ruler in a bucket, and in the morning, we're going to look at how much water is next to the ruler. Why put down a bucket? Why not just put the ruler into the ground and see how much water is by the ruler into the ground? Why? Right? Because the ground is going to soak it up. You are the ground. No matter how much money we throw your way, soak it up, soak it up, soak it up, soak it up. A monsoon, soak it up, soak it up, soak it up, soak it up. A hurricane, soak it up, soak it up. No matter how much money, we will soak it up. If you put out a bucket, you can catch some of it. So that's what I like to call my online-only savings accounts, my money buckets. And so what I love about it is that, so I don't know if you're like me, but if I go, so Target is my favorite, right? So you know you go to Target, you never leave what you came for, right? And so I was a type, I would buy something and then be like, huh, I'm pretty sure I don't have enough in my checking. And so I don't know why you play this game. You'd have your phone, and you know you have the money in savings. And you're about to swipe, and you're like, transfer, 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 right? Swipe. And so I realized that my savings was too convenient, right? So I said, how do I make my money inconvenient? By putting it in a money bucket, in an online-only savings, unless I plan to camp out at Target for 24 hours, that transfer is going to take that long. You know, so what it did was it made my money inconvenient, and inconvenient money gets saved. So I have some basic savings at my big bank, but I also have like the savings that I have for specific things. I even name them. I have a house account, a car account, a travel account. You can name them and open as many accounts as you want. You know, so that way you're not pulling your Paris money for fast food. There's nothing wrong with getting fast food, but wouldn't you rather have fast food in Paris, right? It tastes better. So money buckets, those are critical. Credit. So we're talking about, so I am 39. So Jordan, although I love LeBron, but I grew up with Jordan, right? So we're going to talk, I'm going to show you how to make your credit score jump like Jordan. First things first, you want to, well, actually, you know what? Go back. Make your credit score jump like Jordan. So here's what I learned. So I actually went through during the recession, I lost my job as a teacher because my school closed. And it was a really hard time. And I lost my home. I bought my first home when I was 25. And I thought, ooh, you know, I'm so grown. 25, yes. But then the recession happened, lost my job, couldn't afford my mortgage. And my 802 credit score fell to a 547. And I found out in the most embarrassing way. I was teaching a financial class at the United Way in Jersey, where I live, and I was telling them, you know, go get your free credit score. Go to creditsesame.com. I'll show you. Why didn't I check ahead of time? Because I've always had excellent credit, you know? And then I pulled it up. I'm like, 547. Oh, this is a different Tiffany. Let's take this down. Meanwhile, I'm teaching the class, like, I have a 540. See, this is a good lesson about maybe my identity was stolen. No, it was my credit score. And so I said, how do I raise my credit score quickly? And a friend of mine who was a bankruptcy lawyer said, you know, one of the best ways is to pay off a debt in full. It could be your mortgage, it could be your car note, or it could be $5 on your credit card every month. And I was like, wow. He was like, it's not about the amount, it's about the habit. And so what I did was I had two credit cards that didn't have a balance. And so I looked on my budget. You could do this with just one. And I think I put, like, my gym membership that I was never using on one and something also inexpensive on the other. So something under $50. Those cards stayed home. And what I said was, hey, gym membership, I put my card in the middle. I said, hey, gym membership, charge this card. And then, hey, bills account that we all have now, right? Pay this card off every month. This card stays home. So it was part of a loop that I didn't have to be a part of. The critical component of the loop is you want to make sure that you're paying it off after the statement date. So that is the date that it's being reported that you used it. Because in the beginning, I was charging the card on the first, paying it off on the second. And I'm like, why? My credit score is not moving. It's because I paid it off so quickly, they never had a chance to register the card was ever even used. So you can easily call your credit card company and say, when is my statement date? Or you can just look on your last statement. You know, so it's like the 5th or the 6th or whatever. So you want to pay it off after the statement date, before the due date or by the due date. So usually there's maybe like a 10, 15 day spread, you know. And so doing that with a foreclosure on my credit report, that doesn't just fall off. You know, it took me 2 years now. I went from the 547 to a 750 with a foreclosure. There are people without foreclosures who don't have 750. And 750 is the beginning of perfect credit. So when your friends flaunt like, well, I have an 800. If you have a 750, you're going to get the same interest rate. You know? So I'm like, well, it doesn't matter, girl. We're still walking in the same door. Right? So as long as you get to a 750, you're fine. And so it really worked. You know? And what is that, Bosley? Like, I'm not only the president, I'm a client. Right? It really works. You know? Because I did it. Because you have to understand this about your credit. Your credit is your financial GPA. Remember your grade point average in college and high school? It is an average of your choices. So people will say, well, Tiffany, I paid off my card or I paid off my home or whatever. What is my credit score going to do? I don't know. What did you get freshman year? What did you get junior year? What did you get sophomore year? It's a 1A. So if you and I both get an A in math senior year, I don't know what my GPA is going to be affected differently because I got a C junior year and you got a B plus junior year. So now you have an A average and I have a better B plus average. So you see, it's an average, and especially the last 2 years of your financial choices. That's the part that's really important. So if you've made a bad, poor financial choice 4 years ago, it's not taking as much of a toll as you think. It's really the current thing. So I want you to think of, like, if you told me that you're a really good driver, right? So, or I asked you, like, you know, when's the last time you've been into a car accident? So two people have been in car accidents. They both want to borrow my car. I have to decide who I'm going to actually lend my car to. When's the last time, Sheila, you've been in a car accident? 2 weeks ago. Oh. What about you, Barbara? When's the last time you were in a car accident? 2 years ago. Guess who I'm lending my car to? Not Sheila. Sheila is fresh off the wreckage, right? Because we're looking at current behavior. Same thing with your credit. So if you want to raise your credit score, you really want to work on it now. And the other things will slowly have less and less significance, right? So making your credit score jump like Jordan, just paying off a credit card in full every month, the amount does not matter. So make it as low as possible. That's a credit card you're not going to use. You're just going to use it for this purpose. All right. Another way to raise your credit is to know someone with great credit and become an authorized user. You see, it's me, like, because I've got great credit. I'm back in the 800s, right? And so grandma, aunt, uncle, someone that you would trust with your Social Security. So you don't want to obviously ask a stranger. So people sometimes will sell trade lines, but I don't really think that that's a good idea. So my little sister, Lisa, the baby, who's not a baby anymore, but still acts like a baby. Who's the baby in the family? Y'all babies are a mess, right? Lisa is turning 30. I'm like, Lisa, get your life together. But she's still the youngest of five. And so Lisa asked me the other day, hey, sis. I said, what do you want? Right? I can be an authorized user on your card. And I said, yes. So we call my credit card together, and I added her on as an authorized user because I was paying that credit card off every month. Now it looks like we're paying that credit card off every month. Did Lisa get a card? No. Could she? If I wanted to as an authorized user, I could issue her one. But so the good thing is Lisa's activities, they don't affect me. My activity on that card positively affects Lisa. You know? And so a lot of parents do this for their children. Like, add them on as an authorized user so you can build their credit and they don't have to get a card or anything. And so if you know someone with decent credit, you're not going to see normally a huge spike, but it depends. Remember, it's your GPA. If this person has no credit history, you're going to see a big jump. If they've got a lot of credit history, not as much, but it'll be at least something positive on their credit report. So authorized user. All right. Here are the five components of your credit score. This is important. 10% inquiries. That means anytime you go to a place and they say, would you like to open up a card to save 20% off? What they're really saying is, yes, would you like to lose 8 to 30 points off your credit score? For real. So my sisters hate going shopping with me because I always have it in my head, if the lady asks me twice, I'm going to school her. She's like, would you like to open up a card? No, thank you. And I'm like, ooh, ask me again, ask me again, ask me again. And if they ask me again, I'm like, actually, did you know that every time you open up a card for somebody, you're potentially having them lose 8 to 30 points? That even if I save the 10%, the loss in credit score means that I'm going to pay more in interest over a lifetime. And they're like, they just told me I have to ask the question. I'm like, I know. Just give me a little something. I'll take these jeans, please. So inquiries, being mindful. Do not apply for anything unless you really need it, you know? Because other than that, you're losing your credit is your ability to purchase things at a rate that's reasonable. And so you don't want to waste it because, you know, you have every store card under the sun. Because eventually you might want a mortgage or a car or things that you really have to get an inquiry on. 10% type of debt. This just means you have a mix. You don't have to do anything, just live longer. You know, they want to know, like, you've got installment loans, like a student loan. You've got revolving debt, like credit cards. You've got maybe a mortgage. You just live longer. You don't have to do anything there. It just happens naturally. 15% length of credit history. Keep your oldest credit card open. This is an average. So if I've got a card that's 20 years old, and then I open up a new card, 1 year old, that's 20 plus 1 is 21 divided by 2. And I'm like, so imagine I open two cards, 20 plus 1, 2, that's 22 divided by 3. So you want to be mindful about opening new cards and keep your oldest card open. My first card that I opened when I was 18, I still have it to help with the length of credit history. People just like to see that you have a history of being able to manage your finances correctly. And then 30% amounts owed utilization. That means this is the secret of why most people have poor credit, but they don't understand. They're like, their payment history is good, which is 35%, which is, do you make your payments on time and by the due date? But like, for example, when I met my husband, like date three, I was like, so what's your credit score? He was like, I'm the budgetista. Come on, you knew this was coming. He was like, I don't know. I was like, you know who knows? Credit karma. We looked, it wasn't so great. I think it was like a 620, 630. And I was like, well, are you paying your bills on time? He's like, I am. And I looked, he had one credit card. It was a secured card. And it was, the limit was $500. And he had a balance of like 480. That means he was nearly maxed out. And he was like, no, I maxed it out on purpose so I can pay 25 bucks a month to show I can make on-time payments. I'm like, who told you that? That's just not true. His utilization was through the roof, even though he wasn't late. And so I said, do you have the 480 to pay it off? He said, I do. He paid it off. And then 3 months later, his credit score went up 100 points because of utilization. So utilization is your credit limit versus your balance. You really want to stay under 30%. If your credit limit is $100, you want your balance to be no more than $30. That's the new maximum. Because anything over that is tanking your score. You know? And so just be mindful of that. And payment history, that's just, do you pay? And do you pay at least a minimum or more? So the last two are really the most important. And your FICO score range is right here. So just know that you really want to be 700 or above, ideally. You know? So anything below that, the interest rate that you're going to get is going to make for a very expensive life. Bad credit makes for a very expensive life. It costs you so much in interest. It costs you so much in, you won't be able to refinance at a fair rate. You won't be able to get, sometimes you have to leave deposits down just to get a cell phone. So working on your credit is really essential. Got it? We're going to do a Q&A at the end. All right, debt, everyone's favorite. Don't we just love some debt? No. But here's how I get rid of my debt in a way that's actually kind of like a little bit fun. I call it unexpected money. So that's money from an unexpected source. So just anything outside of your normal job. So birthday, holidays, baby sister finally pays you back after 10 years, right? Your friend treats you to lunch and you intended to spend. You're at Target and you see a dress or a shirt or whatever, and the person says this dress, shirt, or whatever is actually 50% off. You don't want to get another one, right? That extra money that you're saving was money you intended to spend, so that's unexpected money. What do you do with unexpected money? You use your smartphone. And what I like to do for debt is I like to make a transfer of the money that I either got or was going to spend and transfer that toward debt that I'm working on. So $5, $10, keep transferring that toward the principal to knock it down. And it's going to make your monthly payments lower. But you have to do it within, honestly, 24 hours of receiving it, or you're not going to do it. Here's the thing. Just because you didn't spend money doesn't mean you saved it. So you go to Target, you get a dress, they said it's 50% off. You're like, yay, I saved 50%. Not until you put that 50% somewhere did you actually save it, right? Because you're just going to absorb it. You're going to say, ooh, I saved $10, and on your way out, let me get a pretzel, let me get a, right? And so you have to put it somewhere. So either you put it toward debt, or you put it toward savings, or you put it toward investing. Those are the best places. So, and this is not money that you have to dig out. This is money you either intended to spend or money that you've saved from doing some, you know, responsible activity. Or someone paid you back, or you, like I said, it's a gift. So, but you see how easy that can be? All right, got it? Good. All right, so I always give away freebies. Here's one of them. I do this free challenge every year called the Live Richer Challenge. Over 700,000 women in the last 5 years have signed up for the Live Richer Challenge. Every year I have a new theme. This year's theme is net worth. And it is a course, free, it's a 3-week course. Every day in your inbox you get a small task that leads you toward whatever the subject is. So we had a savings edition, a credit edition, the fundamentals, and this year's a net worth edition. And so net worth is what you own versus what you owe. I own this house, but I owe this mortgage. The difference is what I really have. And so the net worth edition really teaches you how to reduce what you own and increase what you own. And so it's completely free. It's my way of giving back. I've been really blessed and fortunate, and so many people poured into me. So every year, this is something I commit to creating, a challenge that is completely free. You could sign up at any time. They don't come down. If you decide I don't want to do the net worth, all of the challenges are at liveritualchallenge.com. You could pick one that you do like and say, I want to do the savings edition or the credit edition or whatever. But it's great. Don't do it alone. It's like going to the gym. Right? It's easy if you have at least one accountability partner. I've seen people do it at work together and have fun together. So now it's time for homework. Homework. Take a picture. Here is your homework. I want you to create a budget. I am going to give you the tool that you need in order to create a budget. I'm going to give you day one of the one-week budget for free. If you email Michelle, she is ready at contact@thebudgetnista.com. She's going to send it to you. Or you could even just go to thebudgetnista.com and click contact and a contact form. You could do it right from your seat. A contact form pop up and just say Texas conference presentation or Texas conference freebie, and she'll send it to you. Like, the sooner you do it, the better, because I know she's going to get hundreds today. So that's two. Create a budget. She's also going to give you the template to fill in for yourself, because I believe that, like, if you had the tools, I believe that you would do better. And so I feel like it's my responsibility to provide the tools. Two, I want you to open up a bills account. If you don't have a separate checking account, not attached to a debit card, for bills, do it. It will change your life. And from that bills account, automate your bill payments. That way you only have to transfer money every pay period and the bills account does the rest. Because when you take out the human element, you're more likely to stick to a budget. Number three, open up an online-only savings account. That's just going to be your best friend, because I'm not as disciplined as you would think. But with my online-only savings account, I don't have a choice. I can't go get my money conveniently. So half the time, I'm like, I don't even need it. It's not even that serious. I don't want to wait 24 hours to get my money for this dress. Number four, automate a monthly credit card payoff. So just that's that jump like Jordan. Charge $5, $10 Netflix to that one credit card. Have it paid off every month in full. Number five, become an authorized user. Be careful, though, because if Granny's old and Granny's had a credit card for 50 years and you're 39, don't get on that credit card. I've seen my friends do that, and the bank's like the mortgage people are like, oh, so you've had credit for longer than you've been alive. Interesting. So just make sure that the timing works out, right? Six, sign up for the free Live Richer Challenge. And seven, like I said, hit up Michelle. She will give you the one-week budget day one for free and the template. I do have books downstairs. It's actually the Live Richer Challenge books from the first challenge. It goes over budgeting, savings, investing, credit, and debt. And so I have those downstairs. So if you do have a question, if you want to meet me downstairs, because, you know, they told me to say that. They said you guys like the bum rush, which is cute. Well, we're going to meet downstairs at the at the book signing. So I am ready to take questions. Lazy, how do you wanna? Okay, we have a special 1-2 step that we have to do. No, but I hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you.
So, thank you, Tiffany. We are gonna give the audience a chance to ask questions, but first I have one.
Okay.
You've shared so much great information today. Can you take a moment just to summarize the top two, if we did nothing but this two things.
Okay.
What would you say those most important things?
First thing I would say, definitely open up an online-only savings account. That's going to change your life. Making your money inconvenient money gets saved. That's one. Thing number two, automation. Some sort of whether it's automating savings or automating your bills, automation is the new discipline. That will absolutely change your life. So if you don't do anything else, those two things will make a huge difference.
Okay, now if anybody has questions, we've got mics in the aisle. If you can just go to the mic so everybody can hear your question, that would be great.
We'll go here first and then here. We'll go back and forth.
Okay, so as a college student who is trying to budget and everything, how did you make plans for unexpected expenses? Mm-hmm. So you've explained, like, you know, your bills, everything that you have to do every month. What about I want to go or something unexpected happens? What do you do?
So the thing is, as an adult, you have to expect there are going to be unexpected expenses. So I used to literally set aside money and call it unexpected expenses, meaning, like, I don't know what you're for, but I know it's coming. whether it's $25 a paycheck, $50 a paycheck. So basically, your emergency fund.
Yeah.
So setting aside money for that, and that's what it's for when those things come up, then you're like, okay, well, the car broke down. I mean, it was eventually going to happen anyway. So setting aside money every pay period for things like that, even though you don't know specifically what it's for.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I kind of geek out on this. I'm a CFP by nature.
So okay.
Great advice. I do get a lot of members who I work with incomes that fluctuate pretty dramatically. So I'd like to see your best advice on that and how much you really recommend from an emergency fund standpoint.
So it depends. I always say emergency fund. They tell you, oh, 3 months to 3 to 6 months. I say it depends. So my mom, who is a nurse, she's just retired. 2 months was more than enough because as soon as her hospital closed down where she was working, she got 50 calls. So it depends how quickly you know you can replace your income. My sister, who is an engineer, it took her 2 years to get her first job. It is not so easy as an engineer to get from job to job, especially if you're new. So she needs way more of an emergency fund to cover her should she lose her income. So it all depends on how quickly you can get your income back. And then when it comes to fluctuating expenses, and so this is my life now, so I live off percentages. I believe numbers rule. So when I was a teacher, I set aside a specific number. So let's just say I made $3,000 a month. It was $1,500 for bills. So $750 per check goes to my bills, right? But now that I'm an entrepreneur and it goes up and down, I don't do that. Instead, I live by percentages. 10% to give, 5% for savings, you know, 70% for bills. So living by the number, but the number is percentages. And depending on where they are. So in the beginning, when I first started, it was 100% for bills, 110, you know? But as I make more and more, then it was like 90, then 60, then 70. So really finding the percentage and sticking with that and adjusting, that's the best advice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So what are your recommendations for parents of teenagers that are just starting to get like seasonal part-time jobs that are looking to have a budget?
Yeah, so for your teenager, you're going to want to sit them down. This is what my dad used to do. We would sit down every pay period, and I would have to show him that I put aside money for savings and that I put aside money for giving and that the rest I can spend as I like. So it's just like being an adult. So giving, if you so choose, saving, but saving also equals is saving / investing. So it would be 10% for giving, 20% for saving / investing. But I was a teen, so it was just savings at that point. And then 70% for spending, which would, as an adult, would be bills and the rest of your life. And so I would have to show him those transfers. And I still do that to this day. Not show my dad, but still set aside. Still set aside that money because of that habit. You know, I wasn't some, like, great kid. I mean, I guess, but I mean, I was a kid. But that habit of doing that is why, as an adult, it's not a big deal to me now. You want to normalize responsible behavior, and those percentages are going to be great, even if you've got a little one. So my husband and I have a bonus daughter. She's 12. So when she gets money, she hates it. She's like, oh, I hope Tiffy doesn't find out I got money. Because I'm like, heard you had a birthday. Heard you got some money. She's got little coffee cans. It says giving, saving / investing, spending. She has to put her 20, 10, 70. And when we go to Staples, which is her favorite, which is odd that she, like, loves Staples, right? When we go to Staples, she's like, ooh, you know, like, I can't wait to buy something at Staples. I'm like, well, go look what's in your spend jar. She's like, my spend jar? I'm like, yes, that's where your spending money is. And she looks, there's nothing in there. I'm like, well, I guess there's nothing at Staples. And so she's learning, like, okay, I have to make choices with my finances. So that's just a great way to start your kids off so they don't sleep on your couch when they're 30.
Thank you.
Yes.
Do you also invest in any brokerage funds or Roth IRAs or 401ks? And how do you, what's your thought process to how much you put towards those?
So in the beginning, I say at minimum, they really say that ideally you want to do 10%. Now that I make much more now, I put away more because I'm self-employed, you know. But ideally you want to get to about 10%, especially as a woman, even more if you can. And so what you want to look at is at your current job, if you have a job that does matching. So matching is when you put money and then your job might put money. So usually they have a max, a cap of maybe like, say, 5-6%. So you put 1%, they put 1. You put 3, they put 3. You put 5, they put 5. You put 10, they put 5. So if you have a matching, at the very least, match to what they match. And if your job doesn't offer any sort of like IRA or any sort of retirement account, you can open up your own. Honestly, I say keep it simple. I really like just an index fund. you know, a total market index fund for stocks and a total market bond fund. And just the rule of thumb is this: how old you are is how much you should be invested in bonds. So I'm 39 because bonds are safer, right? I'm 39, 39% bonds. My dad is 75, 75% bonds versus 25% stocks. So that, like, so if you don't know anything else, you could just put it into like a Vanguard or a Charles Schwab or, you know, something that what you're really looking for is who has the lowest, I forgot the name of the fee. They call it the
admin fee or whatever.
No, yes, but basically the admin fee, but there's a name for it. It's, of course, I'm going to remember it 10 days from now, right? But, whatever their fee is, you're looking, what percentage is that? So, like, right now, it's under 1%. I think it was, like, 0.06 or something like that at, like, Charles Schwab or Vanguard. So, because the less fees, the more of your earnings that you're going to make. And the reason why, say, an index fund and bond fund, let's just say the total market fund. So, the market goes up, right? So, it goes up and down, but goes up. It looks like a lightning bolt. Right? So it's like, you know how like a kid draws a lightning bolt, it looks like this, right? So that's what the market does over time. It goes up, but there are fluctuations on its way up. So if the market is always going up, like eventually, then you're young. If you put your money in a total market fund, it's just going to mirror the market. Meaning like, will there be dips? Yes. But on its way up versus trying to, unless you have the time to try to time the market and all those other things, which most people don't. So just having those like bond fund and total market stock fund, you should be fine.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to get your opinion on cancellation of debt mm-hmm. and whether you think that's ever a good idea, just from someone who has a lot of credit card mm-hmm. debt. And what I make is kind of modest, so I'm not sure, mm-hmm. you know, when I'll really be able to pay it off with the interest being so high. So if you ever think that cancellation of debt is the right way to go.
Yeah, if they will allow you. So typically it's not going to be super, like, cancellation. They'll just work out a payment plan for you. And so it all depends. How, if your credit is already kind of shot, I remember like when my credit was the 547 and I was trying to decide what to do. And I was like, oh, and my friend was like, well, I mean, now is the time. Your credit is already shot. So if you're going to ask for, because if you pay less than what you owe, your credit score is going to drop, you know, but if your credit is already low, it's like, well, now's the time. We're here now, you know? And so, because when you negotiate, because you have to think about it. If someone wants to lend to you and they see, well, the last person she borrowed from, she didn't pay back the full amount, then it just gives you like a lower rating, but it doesn't mean forever. So if you know I'm not going to be able to pay this debt off, it's just not possible, then yes, negotiating for this is what I can pay. But you have to come with your budget in mind of what you can pay, because you don't want to negotiate and get yourself into a payment plan that you can't afford that either, because they're always going to try to push you to pay more. So then I always say, like when I was negotiating for myself, when I was trying to raise my credit score, I would say like, look, I for sure can do $100 a month. I know you're pushing me for $200. I can say $200, but you're not going to get $200. You know, wouldn't you rather me say what I could actually, you know, give you? So be sure of that. And then if you can get together a lump sum, like, you know, that's even better. Like, you know, I know I owe $10, but I have $2,000 right now. You know, and sometimes what you can ask for is if they can give you a letter that says paid as agreed upon, or if they can report paid as agreed upon. They're under no obligation to do that because it looks a little better than settled. You know, but I would say go for it if you know you're not going to be able to pay it off on your own.
Hi. So how is your credit score affected if you have 2 credit cards versus 5 credit cards that you pay on time and no delinquency?
So it all depends. It's all utilization is an average, right? So if you have 5 credit cards and they have no balances, and you have 2 credit cards and they have no balances, it's the same person. Really, it's the level of balances you have versus the credit that you can borrow from. So I've got 1 credit card with a $30,000 limit that I don't use at all. It's my Jump Like Jordan card. And I purposefully keep it because I know I have 1 card that I use more actively. And so that offsets the balance to say Tiffany could borrow $30,000, but she's only using $2,000 at a time. Now, if I close that $30,000 card because I'm not using it, then all of a sudden, this 1 card that I'm working with, I look like I'm taking on a lot more debt. And so definitely you want to, like, so it depends. Like, if you're paying off all your cards altogether, closing those 2 are not going to matter. But if you are actively using 1 card, then having a card that you don't use is going to help your utilization.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, so I'm hoping to be able to retire in the next 8 years or so. Okay. I currently own 3 mortgages, as I say.
Okay.
I have 2 rentals here in Austin, and I just bought a house in San Antonio.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My question is, you know, the market here in Austin's pretty hot, and so I've thought about, am I going to be better off? I mean, I've got both of them rented, so I've got the income coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But am I better off potentially, as I approach retirement, selling those to pay off the new mortgage I have so I don't have a house payment? How do you balance that against continuing to have that rental income, although I've got active balances against all 3?
So I say this, it all depends on how much. So it's a difference between how much you're going to be spending out in retirement versus how much you're going to make. So I would do the math to say, okay, if my mortgage is, say, $2,000 a month in San Antonio, but these 2 properties are making me $5,000, and one of them is a $3,000 mortgage, I get rid of the $3,000, you know, to pay off this. So I'm not paying 2. So I lost $3,000 to not pay 2. You see what I mean? And so you're wanting to make sure that, like, well, it's income versus what you're putting out. At the end of the day, it's about budgeting. So I get not wanting to. I mean, my parents just paid off their house. Actually, I did. I was like, you're welcome. right? But that was very helpful. But, like, you know, like, if... But you, I would do the math. Because at the end of the day, it's the math that matters most. That am I wanting to pay out less, or am I wanting to earn more? You know? And so if saying, you know what, being mortgage-free is really important to you, then I would do that. Because you don't need as much if you don't have a mortgage. You know? Plus, if something should happen, because God forbid something should happen, and all of a sudden the market isn't as hot and you can't get as much rent, you're like, well, I know one thing. We don't have to worry about this house. You know?
Okay.
So maybe it's keeping one and getting rid of the other, but it's really about where you want to be in retirement, how you feel about it, and what the math says.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, you're welcome.
This is the first I've heard of an online-only bank.
Yes.
I don't even know, like,
where to go?
Oh, you what's
know,
the name
said,
of one?
So if you go to, yes, Ally is great, but honestly, if you go to magnifymoney.com, Magnify Money, what I like about it, it's like a site that rates all of these financial institutions, but including online-only banks. But Ally is one. I think Capital One has one. American Express has one. Barclays. But Ally lists them all. I mean, not Ally. I'm sorry.
Magnify Money.
Yep. List them all. I should have said that. I forgot. My old lady brain kicked in. Yes?
Hey. So I do Credit Karma, mm-hmm. and it sends me emails saying, like, oh, your credit score's gone up. Is that an inquiry they're doing?
No.
Okay.
So you've given Credit Karma permission to kind of look at your credit score. And so as a result, when you look at you can look at your credit score every single day. It's not going to affect your credit. It's when someone else, you know, like who is trying to let you borrow money is looking at your credit score that it makes your credit go up or down.
Okay.
You know, and honestly, Credit Karma, I believe, uses like the Vantage score, which is like not quite necessarily the score that the average bank uses. I would use a score. Go to creditscorecard.com. I believe it's by Discover. You don't have to have a Discover card. But what I like about that scorecard, it's that it's closer to the FICO score that an actual lender is going to look at. Creditscorecard.com, and it's free.
I was also going to ask if there are any financial apps that you recommend using.
Well, for savings, I love this app called Digit, D-I-G-I-T. Yes. Right? So the way Digit works, it studies your bank account and says, Tiffany tends to leave $5, $10 here every month. You know, so we're actually going to squirrel away money and put into a savings account for her. And so Digit is just a great free app. And then what I love is at any moment, you can text Digit and say withdraw. And within 24 hours, the money is back into your account. But it basically saves when you say you can't save. Because it's like, really? Because you've got $2 here. Let me squirrel it away. And you've got 4. Let me squirrel it away. And you can set Digit to say, don't take money from my account if I have less than $2,000 in that checking account. You know, so Digit is a great, awesome app. For budgeting, honestly, I like pencil and paper or Excel spreadsheet. You know, just super simple. Let me see what else. What other apps? I mean, like if you're investing, like just for kind of like learning how to invest, I like Robinhood, you know. But that's not, to me, if you don't have a budget and you don't have an emergency fund and you don't have a retirement account, you don't need Robinhood. It's just kind of like fun stocks, you know. You want to put the foundations in place first.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, one more.
I have a question for anyone who just opened their first credit card or if they just opened a new one and you're trying to reach the minimum amount to get their signing bonus, but they also don't increase your credit limit until you've had the card for long enough. So to mitigate becoming too high in your credit utilization rate is the only way to wait for a credit line increase, or if
you can
pay
ask,
off
you can always ask for a credit line increase.
So if they say no, is the only way other than that to pay off part of it before it's due to keep the.
So when you say try to, what's the goal that you're trying to get with that credit card? You're wanting them to give you an increase.
Yeah. So if you open a new card and they say they can't up the credit line
because
it's too new.
Okay.
How do you save your credit utilization rate?
Oh, well, if you continue.
Do you pay off part of it?
Well, you could, but then you're going to have that interest. But if you honestly, like the card that I have, the $30,000 limit, I never use anywhere close to that, but just using it responsibly and paying it off every month, they've kept it increasing my rate. Mm-hmm. So what you can do is use it responsibly, pay it off, and then ask. You know, sometimes there's no rush for it other than just to show I'm using this credit, because that's what they're looking for. Is she using this credit card responsibly? And if you are, then you can ask after a few months. I mean, they're under no obligation to raise you. And, of course, the more that you use it, the higher your balance is, the more likely. But you want to offset, like, is it really critical that you have a super high balance versus not paying that interest? So it's up to you, like, limit, what the goal is. Do I want a high limit, or do I not want to pay interest on the things that I'm buying? You know, but if you continue to use your card wisely, by nature, they're going to increase your limit over time, or you can ask for that to happen. Yeah. You know,
I'm asking if you pay off part of the full before the due date and then pay off the rest at the due date. So you never have a balance, but the balance is then lower.
Well,
does that help?
No, I guess I don't understand the question. Like, so you're saying, does that help raise your credit limit? So always leaving a balance?
Does that help lower your utilization rate? So let's say you spend $300 this month. If you pay $150,
so yeah, you could always leave, like, let's just say, so as long as your utilization is under 30%, whatever you leave on it, anything else really doesn't. So you can leave 10% on, 20% on, just really keeping it under 30%. So let's just say you have a $100 limit card, and as long as, and you're saying I'm only going to pay $10 off the $30 balance, I'm going to leave $10 on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying, like, pay off part of it before it's due, so that when it's due, you're only, it looks like you're spending under 30%. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so you're really after. So after your statement date.
Okay, yeah, after. If you pay off before the statement date.
Yes, before the statement date, yes.
Leave some to pay off after.
Yes, yeah, so if you pay before, I'm like, due date. So yes, if you pay off before the statement date, before they're actually recording, she's above. Then yes, then it should. I mean, you're playing a tempting little game, but you know. So I'll be careful. But yeah. So let's just say you're maxed out, but statement date doesn't come out until the fifth. You paid off by the third, so they're gonna reflect. Oh, she's not maxed out because this is where she is now. Yes, but being very mindful of this is my statement date. Are you sure? Yes.
And we've got to stop there.
All right. Thank you so much. Hopefully, I will see you by the book signing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.